if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Elston Diggs Hare.
Thank you for joining us again. Today we are discussing The Guardian and The Dream Masters. So, kicking it off with our first episode, The Guardian, written by the man, Tracy Chalmay, and directed by the man, Adam Nimoy.
Adam Nimoy's back.
This originally aired October 11th of 1996.
Whoa, nice move, queer.
Your name's Quinn.
Heard about your dad. Pretty blew his brains out in your bedroom.
That's a lie. He was hit by a car.
Yeah, and I was driving. Splattered him good. Think you're so smart, Mallory. You think you're better than us, don't you? I'm gonna dent in that special brain of yours.
That's not very smart, Rex. Even for you. I understand you, Rex. I know your secret. You're dyslexic and you lash out, can't read.
Brady Oaks! One day you'll be a born again and you'll regret all the cruel things you've done. Find God now, son! Don't wait!
We begin with the revelation that Professor Arturo is suffering from a terminal illness, possibly dying anywhere within the next year. Quinn happens upon that information, and while Arturo initially wants to stop sliding and remain on this world, a heartfelt chat between the two of them results in them sliding as usual, keeping the news of the illness quiet from Wade and Remy in regards to the professor's wishes. As our team explores this new dimension, they realize that time seems to move slower here, resulting in 1996 appearing as 1984, and the young boy they see from afar is actually a young Quinn at the funeral of his father. Quinn leaves the group to do something, and the professor decides to enjoy life to its fullest, indulging in driving fast cars, drinking, flirting with young wanton women, bar fights, going to the opera, and even bungee jumping, while Wade and Remy accompany him on his sudden quest for fun. Quinn, under the name of Jim Hall, rescues young Quinn's dog, preventing the event from happening as it did to him. He starts up a friendship with young Quinn, which the professor and Wade do not approve of, going so far as to saving him from being beaten up by bullies, bonding with him as they talk about their father and the great loss, and eventually teaching him how to box in order to defend himself from further beatings, a move not approved of by young Quinn's mom and his teacher, Miss Hanley. However, it turns out that Quinn Prime's reasons for doing so were motivated by the fact that in his world, he attacked the bully with a baseball bat, giving him an injury that affected him for his entire life and resulting in an event that negatively impacted Quinn Prime for his entire life. In this dimension, young Quinn is thus spared that horror, able to heal from the death of his father and move forward a stronger and better person.
I think you're a little confused, Professor. This already happened to me and it scarred me for life. I never got over what happened on that playground.
And you've been angry all your life because you thought you went through it alone.
There's more to it than that.
You're angry now. You're angry at me because I'm going to die and I'm going to leave you all alone. That's all right. Just don't deny it the way you tried to deny the death of your father. Must have been very hard being that little boy. All that happening at school. And then having to go home and try to be the big man of the house.
I know exactly how Quentin feels. I felt the same way. I never cried. Always pushing forward, stuffing my feelings down. Trying to get through it any way I could.
Okay, so getting into some trivia here.
All right, so this episode had some really cool little bits here. I thought that would have been really neat if they had had the time to put this stuff in. So basically, the episode started at a New Year's party that was being held by someone named Jim Hall. There was like a sign that said something about, you know, your New Year's Eve party hosted by Jim Hall or something like that. Tracy Torme said himself that his favorite baseball player was actually a guy named Jimmy Hall, and that's where he got the name from. So on this world here, people apparently kissed 5 minutes before midnight. That was like their tradition in this particular dimension. And the professor shows up and he says to the other sliders, I've fallen in love. This is my wife. And we're going to stay here on this world together. Be happy for me. You know, I finally found what I've been looking for. And, you know, the sliders are like, wow, that's big. But he, you know, tells them this is what I want to do. And so they decide, OK, well, that's fine. What happens, though, is Quinn follows the professor and finds out that the professor was lying. The woman that he was with at the New Year's party was actually his doctor playing the part because he found out he had a terminal illness and he wanted to just, you know, try to get the sliders to slide without him and not feel bad about leaving him behind. So it was all a ploy on the professor's part. It was really cool the way it played. If you go to dimensionsofcontinuity.com in their Lost and Found section, you can read the whole, you know, the whole script transcript there. And it's really, it's a neat scene. It's neat how they came about, what it says in there. So really, really pretty cool. They eventually explained in that script to Remy and Wade, oh, Professor and the girl broke up, and that's why he decided to slide. He's feeling heartbroken. So it was a neat little way to open the show.
It seems like it would have been a bit more drawn out.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for time-wise, obviously, they had to cut it down. But I thought that just would have been, like, imagine the opener, you know? Like, he comes in, and he's like, well, I'm not sliding. I'm in love with this woman here. You know, it's like, what? No, what's going on? It was a nice opener, I thought. Just it is a little bit drawn out. There was a deleted scene that addresses what you said in the last episode about there being millions of worlds out there, millions of dimensions, because people make infinite, you know, millions of choices. And there was a scene where Arturo says to the group, he gives some kind of explanation about how he's done these calculations, and he doesn't think that finding their own dimension is going to be easy. It's like finding the needle in a haystack because there's millions of dimensions out there. And this kind of causes a rift between him and Wade, because she's like, oh, thanks for telling us that. Now I feel real happy. I feel like we can go on. You know, it's like, what are you doing to me, man? You're getting me down. So that was another little nice scene in there. There was a lot more stuff with Arturo living, you know, doing the whole carpe diem, enjoying life to its fullest. There was a scene of him actually getting the car. There was a scene of them at the opera. Instead of talking about going to the opera, we actually see them at the opera, and Rembrandt is like falling asleep, and Arturo is so into it. He's like applauding and standing up, standing ovations and all that. Arturo gets a squishy, which I guess is like a slushy in this world. He goes and he gets candy. He goes bowling. They go do go-karts. It's like they had a whole lot of stuff planned, but you know, obviously they had to cut down or change the way they presented it because of time and money. But still, that would have been neat to see Arturo eating a slushy and eating a candy bar, you know? Something that we don't, you know, you wouldn't expect. Yeah. There's a little bit more to the scene when Quinn returns Bopper, the dog, back to his mom. When he walks in, they were going to have some music playing that his father, you know, was a big fan of. And there was going to be a conversation between him and his mom talking about how she still plays that music because it, you know, makes her feel like he's still around. It was a very, very heartfelt scene. Really well done. It's too bad they had to cut that. In the original script, Quinn was going to stay with his family as a boarder in the guest room. He wasn't going to go back to the hotel. He was going to stay with his mom and young Quinn. And there was a little bit more with Ambrosia, the girl that Arturo was flirting with in the bar. of course, you know, he knocks out the biker in the bar, and Ambrosia is like, how could you do that to him, you know? But in the original script, Ambrosia was going to be much more of a girlfriend for Arturo, because the biker was going to get knocked down, and then while Arturo was acting pompous, he was going to get back up and sucker punch Arturo. And that's when Ambrosia sort of like falls for Arturo and follows him around for the rest of the episode. So when he goes bungee jumping, she's actually there with him, and there's a crowd watching him get ready to do the bungee jump. And like, he gets a little nervous because of all the pressure, and he's looking down and seeing how far it is. And Ambrosia's like, no, let's do it, you know, and she runs up to give him a big hug and pushes him, and they both go off the side to bungee jump. And he's like holding on to her as they fall, you know, and as they're hanging at the bottom, he's holding on to her, and he's like, pull me back up, you idiots, you know, something like that, you know, his typical Arturo stuff. And then in reference to that bungee jump, they're watching TV later on, and there was a news report that showed him bungee jumping, and apparently they start calling it Arturo jumping in this world, because they saw him, you know, do it, and they call it, because bungee jumping hadn't been invented yet, so they call it Arturo jumping, and they call that world's Arturo and ask him for comments, and that world's Arturo is saying like, I would never do anything so stupid like that, quit calling me, you know. it was really fun. It was a fun little moment there. Now, we had a moment back in the season opener with Logan and Quinn, where you were like, ew, if you remember.
Yeah.
When she's hitting on him. Well, I got a bigger one here for you. Quinn, in the original script, tells his teacher, Hanley, that he's from a parallel dimension. Instead of just sort of leaving it open a little bit, it was a less cool scene, definitely. But as he's explaining to her about this parallel dimension, he says he has to go. But young Quinn, maybe in about 10 years, you and young Quinn can connect. Oh my God. What? I mean, here is a grown woman. Yeah, maybe she's like 22, 23, just out of college, and it's her first year teaching. And she's going to look at this 10-year-old boy or whatever and think, oh yeah, in 10 years, he's going to be quite the man. No.
Yeah, I can see why they cut that.
Yes.
Because it's cooler the way it plays in the episode, really.
It's much cooler the way it plays, but I couldn't imagine. Like, you know, it's like, I don't know, because that's a big age difference at that time. I mean, I'll tell you, like, I'm 40. My girlfriend is 33. 7 years right now, not a big deal. However, when I was like in high school, I didn't even want to think about what grade she was in. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, no, we're not going there. So same thing. When I read this scene, I was like, oh, my God. Thank God they changed this.
I think Quinn's going to be okay now. He earned the respect of his peers by standing up to the worst terror on the playground.
You know, the kids are all talking about what he did. He's a real hero now to a lot of them. But, you know, I'll look after him just in case. Until you come back.
Heather, I won't be coming back. I can't explain it. That's just the way it is.
But I thought, I don't understand.
I know you don't, and I'm sorry. I wish I could change the way things are, but it's beyond my control. I'll always remember you, Heather.
All right, well, let's get into our discussion of the episode.
All righty.
So, opening with Arturo getting a scan and finding out he's terminally ill. Mm-hmm. A non-specific tumor, as it were.
And like I said back in the invasion episode, I thought maybe that tumor was caused by that Cro-Mag, you know, device being implanted in him, causing, like, you know, something with the system, his body.
Yeah, and not to mention that just a couple of episodes he got shot in the face by that laser and went blind.
Exactly.
For the episode. Right. It's quite the revelation, and the way they just spill it out like this as well.
Yeah, as soon as they open up the scene, all you see is him going through this CAT scan. It's like, whoa, what's going on?
So it is quite sudden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, still got a few episodes left, but
right,
the inevitable is coming. And he's ready to walk away.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you get news like that, I can imagine, you know, it's like you just want to, like, do whatever you want to do. You don't, you know, you don't want to have to be answering to anybody at that point, because it's like your time is limited. So do everything that you want to do. And if he doesn't really feel like sliding anymore, it's like, I just want to live my life.
And it does begin to set up Arturo as Quinn's father figure as well.
Yes, for sure. Yes.
Because of where we're going to head to next, you can understand why he would get angry at Arturo. Mm-hmm. So, he manages to talk him back into it. You know, he does that whole thing about, you know, fine, walk away, do that.
Right.
Leave us here. And then it comes down to, we need you. What greater adventure is there than sliding? And he's right, you know, because Arturo says that. He says, you know, maybe I'll go, I'll do some reading, I'll have an adventure or something like that. And he said, oh, really? This is the adventure, you know? This is, you know, if you could live your life doing this, I mean, that's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, he says, don't tell the others that I was ready to walk away. Because that was the other thing, too. He wasn't even going to say goodbye to Wade and Remy.
Right.
He was just going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, keep it to yourself. I'm coming with you. They have an excellent slide, which I don't quite understand. Like, why would the slide be so smooth? Crappy graphics, though. Where it's sort of just like, boom.
Right, yeah. I noticed the way they popped out, you know? It was like, boom, and they just land on their feet. I'm like, well, that's different. That's odd.
So, yeah, it didn't look excellent, especially once the vortex closed and it's still that green screen.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
On the normal background, and you're just like, ooh, yeah, it's a bit rough.
Yeah, I don't know why they chose to do that, because I know they had an explanation for, like, gravity later on, but I don't know, like, it just seemed like, why just keep it like normal? Just let them fall out, you know? It would look fine. It would look just like it always has, instead of looking like, you know, like you said here, it looks a little bit crappier.
And it turns out that we're back in time to 1984, I think he said it was.
Right.
When Quinn was a boy. And, of course, we know that sliding is never time travel.
Right.
So they have to come up with an explanation of why they're in 1984.
And the explanation is just, you know, it's kind of confusing. I looked into it, you know, as I do, and Arturo mentions Herbert van Meer, an astrophysicist. But you know what? Once again, we're showing that the sliders are not from our Earth, because there is no Herbert van Meer in our Earth. There's no astrophysicist named Herbert van Meer. There is a Simon van der Meer, who is a particle accelerator physicist, though. So I don't know if they took that and sort of twisted it a little bit. I looked up all the stuff that you know, dealing with him and the time dilation, and it's so confusing. Now, did you know much about it at all?
Not really. As far as Arturo explains it, it's something to do with how the planet revolves around the sun at the same rate.
Right.
But spins a bit faster on its axis. So
yeah.
And somehow that relates to time being a bit slower than usual.
Right. If you look up stuff on this, oh my gosh, it's so, like, there are so many formulas and, like, things that are just so above me. The easiest thing that I found was something that I had read a long time ago, I remembered, about Einstein, the time dilation thing, saying that time can bend depending on gravity and velocity, moving slower or faster. So the experiment that they did back then was take two atomic clocks that were absolutely perfectly synced, put one just in one place, completely stationary, and the other one was put on a jet and sent around the world. And when the planes, when the atomic clocks were brought back together, the one that was in the plane was running slower than the stationary one. So it's kind of like what happens in this world, I guess, is how they were trying to relate it to that. But the whole time dilation thing is very confusing. I remember there was another story about, you know, an astronaut who's traveling out in space, you know, for 10 years, ages slower than people on Earth. So when he comes back, everyone's older, but he's still younger. It's like, wow. And it's some interesting stuff, but for my mind to wrap around it, very difficult.
Having Arturo explain it to Remy, you know, because Remy's really the non-scientific person of the group. Because you got Arturo and Quinn, and then you got Wade, who's, you know, she's good at computers at the very least.
Right.
But Remy's the real layman in this. So when Arturo's explaining it to him, and Remy just comes back with, so we've traveled back in time, Arturo's just like, Yeah, if you say so.
Right, yeah, that's fine. Whatever. That what you just said there actually comes up for the messages in time later on. Someone had mentioned something like that.
I just thought that was a good way to explain it in that, yes, we're giving you an explanation, but at the end of the day, sure, we've traveled back in time, whatever.
Right. Now, this episode, I've noticed it before, but just to mention, have you noticed Wade? She dresses a lot more scantily this season. Not completely like slutty, but she's showing a lot of midriff this season, I've noticed. I've been seeing her belly button more and more, you know?
Well, the 90s goes on.
Yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. I've noticed that. That's one of the changes definitely with this with season 3 for sure.
And the other big thing, Quinn's mom is back.
Yes, we got the right mom back this time.
But it's the same but different house.
Right.
Because I noticed that. They go in the basement and everything, but later when Quinn is walking out of the house with Miss Hanley, that's a different house.
Right. I wish we had more with that mom, because I like her. I think she does a good job as Quinn's mom, you know?
Yeah.
Not like that other episode where we had the other mom who's just sort of there, you know, the actress. Didn't really
Who I call Bizarro Quinn's mom.
Yeah, exactly. I wish they had put in that scene of, you know, him going in and hearing his father's music playing and, you know, the conversation that they had. It was a nice, touching scene between the two of them. I can imagine, you know, how good that could have been. Because, like, not to get too far ahead, but in this episode, like, Quinn, or I should say Jerry, is doing a great job, you know, with these little moments between his younger self, you know, talking with his mom and everything. Really, like, well acted, I think.
Yeah, and I've said it about a few children throughout the series about the bad acting. The boy who plays young Quinn in this does a pretty good job.
Yeah, I liked him. I actually liked him. Like, I didn't feel like he was like, you know, any of the previous children that we had seen. You know, he did a much better job. I could actually believe that is a young Quinn.
It's quite convenient that they would slide into this period of Quinn's life. Because, like I said, you know, Atura was dying. He was ready to leave. Quinn was quite upset by it. And then we head straight into this traumatic moment in his life where his father had died.
Right.
So that's kind of just really impacting the whole father complex that he has.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, that comes to a head later, too, when they have another discussion when Atura is trying to tell him that don't get involved in this boy's life. He may not become the great man that you are,
right?
Without these experiences, you know, he continues. Even Arturo even calls out that he understands that he is like a father figure to him, and that he is angry because he's going to die and leave him alone again.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's the overall theme of this episode, and it's interesting that it should be centered around Quinn rather than Arturo,
right?
Because the episode starts with the news that he is dying. Why not have an Arturo-centric episode? No, we're going to revolve it around Quinn and then sort of have Arturo off to the side doing his wacky carpe diem stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, he goes back and forth between the, you know, the wacky carpe diem and the touching, you know, father figure moments with Quinn. It's like back and forth. I liked Quinn's whole thing, his whole storyline in here, because, you know, like watching himself go through these things again, you know, like, I've always said, you know, like when you have a kid, you know, and you know that you can help prevent what's going to happen, but like you shouldn't because they need that experience. You do have to fail, you know, you do have to fail in order to learn. So it's hard to let your children fail, you know. It's like I see my kids sometimes doing stuff. I'm like, well, you shouldn't do it. All right, you know, let them. Yeah. Let them learn. You know, that's how these things stick in their heads, you know, so that I can understand where Arturo's coming from, because the young Quinn that, you know, that we've been watching, you know, as he grew up, that's how he got to be how he is. So trying to change that would change the boy, you know, the man that he's going to become eventually.
Then we get into this whole thing about there's this big event that's coming. It makes me think like Quinn could have avoided all the trouble he had with the other guys.
Yes.
If he just explained to them from the get-go what was going to happen. But of course, for dramatic purposes, it's just like, oh, there's all these fights coming.
Right.
You know, if he just said from the get-go, in a couple of days' time, I'm going to whack a kid with a baseball bat and that kid is going to be severely hurt. So I need to teach him how to defend himself
right
through boxing so he doesn't lash out that way. then they would have just been more accepting of what he was doing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because that was one of my notes, too. I was like, he should just tell them why he's doing this, and then they'd be okay. Everything would be fine. But it's not, doesn't make for a very good story, a good paced story.
And then, of course, Quinn is interacting with his hot teacher.
Oh, yeah. Handler.
And it's like I said when you were talking about the deleted stuff, about how that would have played more creepy. It's actually really good the way it plays in the episode, because it is that kind of thing. Like, if you had a hot teacher like Miss Hanley, and you had a bit of a crush on her, now here you are, you know, of age, as it were, sort of getting in and maybe fulfilling a little fantasy.
Exactly. No, I'm like all for it. Go Quinn, you know, go ahead. Why not? You know?
Yeah. But, the things that were a bit weird were the fact that, like, Quinn was so interested in young Quinn's life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they call it out for, like, the tiniest little minute where Miss Hanley's like, you really shouldn't be hanging around the school.
Right.
Yeah. And he's just like, I'm not some kind of weirdo or anything. Right. Hand wave. All right, fine, you're not a weirdo. Continue to hang around the school.
Exactly. Today he'd have been arrested and brought up on charges already, you know?
Yeah, interrogated.
Yeah, but see, this is the 90s. All's good, you know?
Yeah, they called it out, but then they hand-waved it.
So we've got Arturo, and I loved him just living life up. I loved his whole Carpe Diem quest. It was great. It was really well done. It was fun to see him acting like this, because that's not how he normally is. The only thing that I was like a little iffy about is when he went to go bungee jump, looking at that harness on him, I'm like, I don't think that's really that safe, because when you bungee jump, you're harnessed in a particular way so that, you know, you don't snap your freaking spine or neck. And he just has this thing wrapped around his waist pretty much. And I was like, if that was real, I think he'd probably be really severely hurt.
Yeah. There's a reason why when you actually bungee jump, they tie it around your legs.
Yeah.
Not your midsection.
Exactly.
But you're right, it was a lot of fun. The one thing though that made me laugh was when they're in the Rolls Royce, and he's playing the music, and Wade sort of flicks the radio to, you know, generic 90s stock music,
right?
And he puts, you know, it's supposed to be like, you know, put the pedal to the metal, you know, let's screech off or something like that,
right?
And it just did not look like the car was going that fast.
No.
Like, Wade and Remy are like blown back by it. Whoa. I'm like, he really didn't. He's not going that fast.
Right? Agreed. Now, this is something that goes a little bit to what we were talking about with the episode post-traumatic slide disorder. Slide syndrome? No, disorder.
It was syndrome.
Syndrome. Okay.
I was calling it disorder.
That's right. Yeah. I was like, wait, which one was it? So they say here, you know, Arturo says, I just saw my first football game. You know, and it was great. But if you remember back in season one, Arturo knew what a wishbone defense was when Quinn threw the rock, you know, at his back, trying to hit the spider wasp.
Right.
So that tells us that Arturo had been to football before. You know, he sort of knew what football was. But in this episode, it's like, no, it was the first time. And so Tracy Torme reasoned, well, that's because, you know, they took the wrong professor. That was his original idea. Remember, we talked about that they were going to take the wrong professor. And that's why that line was in there, to sort of like lay the little hints that this was the wrong one.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he was going to try and build to that, but he was told no.
Right.
No, that's a good catch.
And then another fun moment, of course, was the Indiana Jones reference.
Yes. Man, I laughed so hard when I heard that. Mm. I'd never noticed it before until watching it this time.
And, you know, like reading a little bit more, you know, behind the scenes stuff, Tracy had said, you know, John Rhys-Davies has been trying to work in Indiana Jones forever into the scripts. And finally he had his chance.
Yeah. And it made sense, really, you know, because he does say, you know, you don't think anything of watching Indiana Jones 50 times, but God forbid you go and see an opera more than once.
And that great actor who plays Sala is just wonderful, isn't he, Quinn? He's amazing. Absolutely wonderful. I'd love to see more of him. In fact, they should do a Lord of the Rings movie and cast him. Anyway, Arturo, you know, Arturo is great in this episode, especially because he does a whole about face on his whole idea of non-interference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, you know what? you can be a positive force for good in, you know, young Quinn's life. Help him heal. Which I was like, this is major for him now. You know, it's like, instead of saying, I'm done, I'm not gonna, you know, we're not gonna interfere, we're gonna stay non-involved. Now he's like, you know what? Being a positive force for good, that's what we should be doing. That's what we should be doing in Sliding.
Yeah, it's definitely a good theme and a good message for the episode. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's not like they had, like, a lot of crazy things happen. Like, the main thing was that it was just, it was 1984, ostensibly.
Right. Exactly.
And for the most part, it was just a good character story.
Yes, definitely.
And, you know, at the very end, what does Miss Hanley think about what all this was about?
Yeah, the ending, like, still, like, watching it again, you know, I've seen it, I don't know, any number of times, like, ton of times I've watched, you know, rewatched the episode, and like, it just gives me chills when he says, as he's getting ready to go, and he's like, by the way, my name's Quinn, and he goes off. It's like, I get chills, you know. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, it's a beautiful ending, it's a great ending, and she's left there wondering, you know, like, oh my god, really, really well done.
Exactly. Like, she must think that Quinn is a time traveler. Like, she wouldn't go to parallel dimensions or mm-hmm. anything like that. Like, that wouldn't be her thing. She would think, oh my god, that's Quinn from the future.
Right. And it basically is, you know, kind of.
But yeah, you're right. It is. It's a great line. My name's not Jim, it's Quinn. And yeah, it just leads her to believe that Quinn is such a smart kid that he is going to grow up and invent time travel.
So, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing.
This episode for me, let me tell you, I was thinking about it, especially after the next episode. This episode, there's not a lot of action. There's not a big, heavy focus in this episode on like sci-fi, but it's a good, like, amazing, solid episode because it focuses on the characters. It gives the characters something to do. Like it advances their, them, you know, as characters. It's so much, I like this, so much better than the action episodes.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It is. It really does just focus on characters and mm-hmm. and doesn't try to convolute itself with crazy World of the Week story.
Exactly. You know, like, this one sticks in my head because of the characters and what has happened to them and what changes and how they deal with it. I want more episodes like this, but see, this is not what Fox is going for. This is not what, you know, this is not what they feel sells the show. They want the stuff with the big action, you know, the crazy things that happen, you know, crazy worlds, even crazier worlds. But this is what really Sliders is great at, this type of thing right here, where the sci-fi stuff is kind of like, it's there, but it's not the main focus. You know, it sets up everything, but then everything falls upon the actual story, the characters. And that's a big contrast to what's coming up next.
Yeah.
And now, another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arturo.
If bungee cord jumping hasn't been invented in this world, then it's just about to be, so why shouldn't I be first?
This has been another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arturo.
So, getting into our second episode today, the episode is titled The Dream Masters. Ooh. Okay, so this episode was written by Melinda M. Snodgrass, with story by Scott Smith Miller and Melinda M. Snodgrass, directed by Jeffrey Levy. This originally aired October 18th of 1996.
I used to draw on my hand, too. That was in the fourth grade.
Don't you know what this hand can do?
Not as much as this one.
I can't wait to sleep with you.
You shouldn't have done that.
You don't leave now. I'm gonna do a lot more.
I'll take care of you later. You? See you in your dreams.
We begin with our sliders reminiscing about their previous slide on Cajun World and the celebrations of Mardi Gras.
Our group is then clipped by a pair of bicyclists, one of which gets knocked down by a rollerblader and immediately tells that skater to drop dead, slapping his palm, which shows a pentagram, onto the skater's face. Almost immediately, the skater has a seizure and dies. The cop on duty sees the pentagrammed bicyclist and reports the death as self-inflicted suicide, not wishing to go up against the group known as the Dream Masters, a group of socially awkward students under the direction of a humiliated scientist that can enter your dreams using psychotropic drugs and create nightmares there, affecting your real-life health and well-being. Wade attempts to sleep but can't, so she seeks out coffee and then encounters the Dream Master from earlier, who marks her leg with his pentagrammed hand. Immediately, Wade starts suffering from hallucinations of being chased by the Dream Masters and being trapped from sliding with her friends. As a result of her actions in the dream, she finds herself bleeding outside of her dream. As the group takes shifts to help keep Wade awake, Remy is drugged and falls asleep, allowing Wade to suffer once again from a nightmare attack. A doctor that Quinn and Arturo meet has ways to help fight against the Dream Masters, so they bring Wade there to try and help her, using the doctor's coma-laden husband's research and theories. Our heroes decide to try and enter Wade's dream in order to fight the Dream Masters, facing a number of personal nightmares, but eventually, together, they are powerful enough to overcome the Dream Masters and successfully save Wade. As a result, the coma patients begin waking up as well, and our sliders celebrate their victory by going to sleep.
I believe what we're witnessing here is some form of psychotropically induced stigmata.
Do you think if we hadn't woken her up, she would have bled to death?
Quite possibly, yes.
Whatever it is, that guy must have had some kind of drug on his hand.
Well, Wade did say that when he touched her, she felt a tingling sensation. Now, there are drugs that will produce vivid hallucinations that can be administered through the skin.
You really think he was able to enter her dream?
Well, perhaps he planted a hypnotic suggestion in the bar. In any event, Wade believes that he will invade her dreams, and if she falls asleep again, he will return.
It's kind of like if someone tells you not to think about the elephant, but then that's all you can think of.
How long is it till we slide?
About 30 hours. Are we going to keep awake until then?
Oh, human beings are capable of sustained periods of consciousness, Mr. Brown. Provided that they have sufficient elephants, sufficient stimulation. We shall just take shifts to keep her occupied.
So, the tiniest bit of trivia here.
Yeah, there's a lot of little scenes in this episode that were extended, or little bits and pieces with the other Dream Masters. So instead of just focusing on Gerald, the main Dream Master, the other two guys that were involved, there's little bits and pieces with them, more conversations with them. And none of it was really anything that changed the story. So you could sort of see why they cut it. Just a lot of extra fluff, basically. There was also a moment when Quinn, if you remember, in his dream, he was sinking in quicksand. He wasn't supposed to sink originally. He was supposed to be in a large cave, like a dark cave, and he was sort of like talking himself out of being scared, and then suddenly the whole cave was going to collapse on him. That was supposed to be his part in the dream world. That's what he was supposed to be afraid of. The biggest thing that was in the deleted scenes was how Quinn got that drug scraped from the hands of the Dream Masters, because remember, the doctor said, well, we need the drug that they're using. You know, we need some scrapings from, you know, what they're using. So we see Quinn go in to the Dream Master's school or clubhouse or whatever, and then we see him later. He comes out and he has the stuff. Originally, the scene was going to follow him inside, and there was going to be a whole nother scene with him pretending to be a water delivery man and sneaking into the place, getting into the bathroom and knocking out one of the Dream Masters and then, you know, scraping it off there. You know, it was a whole, you know, convoluted way to get the scrapings, which, you know, just for time, you could see why they would cut it. But that was the biggest thing that was deleted from the original script.
So if you want to blow hard with your big words, tell me how it's my fault that Wade might die, go ahead, man. I don't mind. Because it'll be the last time that I'll ever have to listen to one of your lectures.
The reason why I would not have fallen asleep on duty is quite simple. I do not take coffee late at night. You were drugged.
I was?
Yes. And if I do occasionally sound like the professor I am, it is because I enjoy teaching. I like seeing the light going on in people's eyes the way it has just gone on in yours. Mr. Brown, I owe you an elephant, an apology.
Yeah, all right. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was hoping for something a little more like, I'm sorry that I thought the worst of you. I should have more faith in my friends.
I am sorry that I thought the worst of you. I should have more faith in my friends.
And I know that you love Wade as much as any of us and would probably give your life to save hers if you could.
Ditto.
And then there are times...
Don't push your luck, Mr. Brown!
Well, getting into our discussion of the Dream Masters. So the main thing I noticed as this episode kicks off is that this time the sliders are the exposition extras. And the topic is Mardi Gras.
Everyone's an exposition extra. You're an exposition extra. You're an exposition extra. This whole city is an exposition extra.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny as they're like walking out of that carnival and they're just talking about, you know, what they've been up to. What about Miss Wells' broken heart, hey?
Exactly.
It was just such a weird conversation.
Yeah, it was.
So
it was.
Staged.
And it went on for quite a bit.
Yeah, I know. Like, it took them like 2 minutes to walk along the carnival before anything started to happen.
It's like none of that, like none of what was going on in that previous world really impacted anything on this world. It's like, why did we spend so much time on that?
Yeah. And honestly, you know, I didn't really realize that they had just slid in because they're walking out of that carnival. And I thought, why was there a Mardi Gras going on at the carnival?
Right, right. Well, we never see them come in. Like, we never see them actually slide in. They reference it, but we never actually see the portal like we usually do.
Exactly. That's, well, I just figured that they'd already been on this world for a little while.
Right.
Or something. And, you know, it was weird.
Yeah, and to put an end cap on it, too, we never see them slide out of this world either. So it's like they didn't slide in, they didn't slide out, but they are sliders. Oh. Trust us.
Okay, so we get into the story. We see this whole thing with the rollerblader, who gets an encounter with the sufficiently creepy guy.
Yes. I didn't know when I first watched the episode back in 96, but I did this time because when I saw the creepy guy, I was like, man, he looks like that guy from Fever who was going to turn in Quinn, you know, because he thought he was, he wanted him to be a martyr. Remember that guy in the drugstore?
Oh, yep.
Yeah, so I thought, oh, is that the same guy? So I looked it up to see, and no, it's not the same guy, but it was someone else. It's another guest star that probably no one really noticed. It's Scott Farkas. That's not his real name. That's his character name from A Christmas Story. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
The one with the yellow eyes, you know, the bully. He had yellow eyes. So help me God, he had yellow eyes. It's the actor who played Scott Farkas in A Christmas Story playing the creepy guy, Gerald.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't realize it, but when I looked up, I was like, who's the actor who played that? And I'm like, oh, I think his name was Nick Ward or something like that. I forget. But I was like, I clicked on it and I was like, oh my God, that's him, Scott Farkas. And it has his credits listed and everything like that. And I was like, wow, that's cool.
Well, and the other guy who you thought it was from Fever, he went on to be one of the Lone Rangers in X-Files. So
Right.
Lone Gunmen,
not Lone Rangers.
No, the Lone Gunmen, sorry. Yeah. Just all these like extra people going on to do other things that we recognize them in.
Exactly. Same.
But he's a creepy looking dude, isn't he?
He is.
He plays, like, I really hate the character. I mean, like, he is just so weird and gross and creepy the whole episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Like, is that what he was really supposed to do? Because I hate this character with a passion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he has his breakdown later, he's like, why was I showing off? Oh my God. It's like, oh, my God. What the hell, man? Freaking me out.
Yeah.
I mentioned this at the top of the show. We've got exposition extra Elston Diggs and his hair. It's like, I understand, you know, like, for whatever reason, Gomez Calhoun is gone. I think it's because maybe they switched locations. They're not in Vancouver anymore. And, of course, Will Sasso, who played Gomez Calhoun, he was doing Mad TV. He started doing movies and stuff like that. So he's unavailable, so they had to get someone else, and they got this Elston Diggs thing. But, you know, like, the thing about Gomez Calhoun is he didn't change that much from dimension to dimension. He was basically the same, sometimes some different outfits, you know, a little bit different hairstyle maybe. But they really go out of their way to make Elston Diggs appear different in each dimension they go to. And this one, I was like, what is up with the hair? It's like red and green and so freaking distracting. I was like, oh my God.
The first time we saw him, he was just like a regular bar guy.
Yes, yes.
On, you know, environmental depletion world.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then at the end of that episode, he was Jamaican. And now here he's got green hair.
Yeah,
you're right. Green he's hair. Just all over the place.
And like he plays the part of exposition extra, telling them all about the Dream Masters. And then after he tells them about them, he's like, but we shouldn't be talking about this, you know, and then just walks off. It's like, oh, come on. Diggs, yeah. You're better than this.
I know. It's any reason to get him to just tell you why you should be afraid of the Dream Masters. And
exactly.
So Wade's like scribbled something on a napkin.
Mm-hmm,
girl, mm-hmm. You shouldn't be doing that. These Dream Masters come into your dreams. And there was, and you're like, oh, man. All right. Thanks for the update, Diggs. All right.
Yeah. We really appreciate
it. See you in a couple
it.
Episodes time.
Exactly.
But, you know, this guy Gerald really gets into Wade's head. Like, and if anybody's going to fall for this kind of thing, it's Wade.
Yes, definitely.
And it turns out that we're getting into another one of these, like, occultish kind of episodes, you know?
Yep.
And, I know we were saying, like, back when we were talking about the last one, which was that weird gothic world, and people were saying on the forums how they didn't kind of like that they went to these cultish places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bit strange, because it's not really that they are, like, witches or warlocks or any kind of powerful thing. It seems more that they've just harnessed the energy of chemicals and
yes.
mental, what's the word?
Hypnotic suggestion.
Hypnotic suggestion, thank you.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of cultish because of the way that they've sort of put their organization together,
yes.
the Dream Masters. But at the same time, it's still kind of scientific.
Yeah, it is kind of scientific, and I don't know. This episode is definitely it's the last episode was definitely not very sci-fi-ish, but this one goes into like a whole different genre. I think, you know, it's not really close to sci-fi at all.
No, I don't think so. And we really don't get a lot with the cult itself, anyway.
No, we don't.
We really only deal with Gerald and those couple of lackeys, and then there's that one scene with the guy who started it all, the scientist guy,
who is so oh my God, he is so like. Over the top campy,
yeah.
You know, like in his line delivery, in his like actions, the way he moves, you know, and like when he's talking about the pentagram and he holds up his hand so dramatically, you know, it's like, God, man. And I think I've seen this guy in other things as well. And he's kind of campy in those, you know, in those shows as well. I forget where I've seen him, but he seems so familiar to me.
Yeah. It was interesting that they would go with that kind of character. Or characterization, because we do find out these Dream Masters aren't really the kind of people who you should be afraid of. They try to set up that, like, everybody's afraid of these people. And I'm like, really, their backstory is that they're a bunch of geeks and losers.
Yes.
Like, not putting down, like, I'm a big nerd myself. I'm a huge geek. But these guys are also, like, real big losers.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that they're following, I would surmise is quite possibly a closet homosexual.
Yeah, could be.
Or he might be an out and proud homosexual. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
he
just
has the
weird.
Lipstick going on.
Yeah. It's just a weird cult thing, and nobody should be afraid of these people because it seems that they have to touch you with their weird pentagram hand that has chemicals and stuff on it in order to actually do anything. So it doesn't seem that hard for police to go in and arrest them.
Yeah, you know, like put on a hazmat suit,
you know,
and then go in there with your guns and freaking train your guns on them. And then what are they going to do? You know,
exactly.
I mean, it shouldn't be hard to arrest them. It shouldn't be hard to like stop them, especially if they're doing this stuff and people are willing to come forward. It should not be hard to take care of. That's what I was thinking when I was watching. I was like, man, can't you just go in there with a gun and shoot the hell out of these guys?
Exactly. And, you know, there's a beachside cop who doesn't look like a cop at all. She's wearing, like, a cyclist's outfit.
Right, right.
And she's just like, well, they've vowed to avenge any death. And I'm like, yeah, but you know where their headquarters are, so just go and arrest them all. Like,
yeah, and there's not very many of them. Even if there are, they're all there, you know?
Yeah, there's, like, 10 of them. They're killing people in the streets. Do something. Yeah. You're police.
Oh, yeah. No, so, I'm with you.
Didn't quite make sense. But anyway, getting into it. Of course, Wade is under Gerald's spell. And you have to call out that this is pretty much A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yep. Another film tribute, we'll say.
That's pretty much what they're going for here. They're putting their own twist on it, but it's just, you know, we're going to attack you in your dreams. And the solution is that you need to just accept that it's only a dream. So we're all going to band together and we're going to fight you. It's A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 by the end. The Dream, which I believe is actually called The Dream Warriors.
Oh.
And that's all about like a group of people getting together to fight Freddy Krueger.
Gotcha. Okay.
I guess, you know, they start getting into this thing about like what your biggest fears are. And Wade's is that she was mugged once at knife point. So she's got this big fear of being cut.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything that Gerald's doing to her has to do with like, oh, she's getting cut up by razor wire and they're throwing knives at her and whatnot. So yeah. I mean, I understand that the time slot it's in, it can't be too gruesome. We get a little bit of blood.
Yeah.
But it's really not that frightening.
No, it was not. I was like, oh, that's nice. It's not creepy at all.
Yeah. And there's always a resistance, too. So,
of course, the doctor. Yes.
Yeah, Quinn and Arturo track down this doctor, but then her husband was a doctor, too, and he's in a coma now because all these people are in comas. And yeah, the episode just keeps going along like that.
And, like, I was, like, wondering, like, why does Quinn and Remy go to the Dream Master's clubhouse just to, like, hey, you guys better stop messing around with us, you know? It's like, come on, really? What did that solve, you know? Obviously, they're not scared of anybody on this world, but, you know, they're going to be scared of you guys coming up to them.
And it's super weird that, like, their only form of intimidation is to hold up their hand with the pentagram on it.
Right.
And they're constantly doing it, just walking around with their hand and the pentagram up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's not threatening at all. You are clearly a weakling person.
Right.
And if not for the chemicals on your hand that you use to ostensibly intrude people's minds so you can rape or murder them.
Right.
You are a weakling person who needs to just go away.
Yeah, if you have just a little bit of like upper body strength, they go to touch you with that hand, you just grab that arm and pin it behind their back, you know? And then it's like, all right, what are they going to do now?
You're no match for a sword. I'll cut your hand off.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
And the other big thing I noticed too is in the dreams, Gerald is constantly screaming.
Mm.
But it comes out this weird shriek that sounds like the alarms on the Cro-Mag ship.
I hadn't noticed that. Yeah.
It was weird. Like, I know I've heard that before. That's right. The alarms went off on the Cro-Mag ships, and that's the exact same sound. I don't know if they were trying to tie Cro-Mags into it or if that was just a stock noise that they had, but it was
weird. I'd say probably a stock noise with the way things have been going. Yeah. I think, what sounds do we got? Oh, that one? Yeah, use that again. But we use I don't care. Just put it in there. This episode is due in like an hour. Put it in there. The one thing I really didn't like is, you know, you had mentioned as well here in the notes, the whole Arturo apology.
Are you saying you didn't like it?
No, I do like it.
Oh, you do like it.
Yeah, I do like it. I thought it was great. It was really great.
I think that was the best scene in the whole episode.
Yes, it was, which is sad, you know, but that is the best part.
Remy's like, well, you know, I guess, well, Arturo says, I owe you an apology. So Remy's like, oh, you know, this would be good. Go ahead. Like, Arturo's got his hand out to shake his hand as if to say, like, that was my apology.
Right.
But Remy makes him say it, and then he's like, but now you need to say this as well.
Right.
And then when it gets to the point, of course, as Arturo does, where he just boils over and does his big, don't push your luck, Mr. Brown. And then they just break into laughter.
Yeah.
It was hug really each good. Other. Yes, we're friends. This is, you know, we push each other's buttons. I get what you're doing. It was just a fantastic moment between them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Really. That's my favorite part of the whole episode.
But, of course, everyone heads into Wade's dream and they fight back to save Wade.
Which this goes, for me, I think this goes a little bit outside of the scientific explanation going into her dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know much about science, but I don't think you can actually do that, can you?
Well, it's that whole thing, too, about how they just, like, you know, they found the resistance, and they're just going through this coma doctor's notes and stuff like that. And Arturo's just like, that's it. It's right here. And I'm like, well, if it's right there in his notes, then why hasn't he done it before? Is it because he went into a coma before he could do it?
Exactly.
And his wife's not actually a doctor. She sort of just picked up where he left off, not knowing anything. I don't know. But yeah.
The thing that confused me about it is because they took the four sliders together in that room and they link them all together to get into her dream. But once they're in there, the other coma patients show up in the dream as well. You know, it's like, wait, they weren't linked. Are the dreamers just naturally linked if you attacked by a dream master? I don't know, but they showed up.
You know, they get in the whole thing, like Remy Wade and the snakes, and then Quinn was sinking. And for some reason, Arturo was in front of a firing squad.
I know.
Like,
he actually, just, you know, because of his beard and his hair and everything, he reminded me a little bit of Fidel Castro, you know, in that outfit. I was like, oh, look at that. Fidel Arturo.
Yeah. And then, you know, they band together. The Dream Master's throwing knives and stuff at him. And then he throws a fireball at them. Quinn catches the fireball and throws it back at him. And he gets, like, so engulfed, and he seems, like, so in pain. And you're just like, yeah, you know, you stuck it to him. No, he sort of comes out of their, you know, weird mind-melding room, and he's got a bit of fire on his arm. He just pats it out and walks away. And I'm like, what the hell?
Everything's fine. He's good. Everything's good.
Like, I know we've said before that sometimes it's so annoying when it's all well that ends well for the episode. If there is one episode I want to see that guy taken down and the Dream Master's gone, it's this episode. And they don't give it to us.
And, like, the thing that bugs me is, like, yeah, they beat Gerald. Fine. They beat him that time, right there. Then they go right back to sleep. And the Dream Masters are still okay. Can't they just go and attack again? Because they just went back to sleep again.
Yeah, I don't quite understand.
Yeah, it's just not the best resolution, I guess.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, it's a convoluted mess. I didn't like it. I didn't like the supporting cast in it, really.
No.
It's a terrible story.
It is.
It's like, this is the pits. This is the pits of Sliders. It really is. I mean, I love the show. We're doing the podcast on it. Of course we love the show. But this episode, man, just infuriates me. It's stupid.
See, I was going to say this is my favorite episode of all time. Now I feel bad.
Q-Ball? Where are you?
Quinn!
What the hell is this?
I'm Red. Did I ever tell you that I am really afraid of snakes?
Fond of them myself.
What?
It's just a dream. It's a damn convincing one.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna let one of them strike me. It's the only way to prove that they can't hurt us, okay?
Okay, so let's get into some messages in time.
All right, so we're starting with the Dream Masters. And just as we said, you know, people back there in 96 were saying, you know, one guy with a gun could take over these Dream Masters just like that. You know, it's like they seem like they're supposed to be a huge group, but they're really just, you know, a small group of a couple guys. It's like, why didn't someone just take a gun to them? They also said, why hadn't the feds stepped in? You know, if people are doing stuff like this, you figure the feds would be able to take care of it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. They also said, you know what? Our guys, our sliders are just like, they land on this world and suddenly they're experts in lucid dreaming and they're able to win very easily. You know, it's like that probably shouldn't be, you know, like lucid dreaming is a difficult thing to do, and it should have been a little more difficult for them to have one, is what they're saying. There's this one guy, and you can't see his name because it's such an old form, and it's like been quoted and, you know, whatever, requoted so many times. But this one guy, it just was like, oh, man, I'm thinking this is why we don't get the sliders that we want, because of guys like this. Because this guy was like, that was a great episode. He threw a fireball and he caught it and he tossed it back and he said, you know, can you catch? It was so cool. That's the best episode of Sliders I ever saw. I was like, really? That's the best episode of Sliders because he threw a freaking fireball. You know, you're not excited about the Guardian script, which was so well done, so well acted. No. Oh my God, that fireball, freaking awesome, dude. It's like, oh my God, it's you. It's guys like you that ruin good stories. I don't know who he was. I couldn't see his name, but I'm like, come on, man. Really? Off my soapbox. Okay. there was a reference. Someone said that the episode felt a little bit like Spectre of the Gun, the Star Trek original series episode, you know, with Quinn playing the part of Kirk. Arturo is the part of Spock. Remy was Scotty and Wade is Chekhov. I don't know. Do you remember that original series episode? It was the one where they were like in the Old West.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, so they were feeling it was a very similar type a story for this one. They also said that the reason the Sliders won, you know, despite not being good at lucid dreaming, was because the Dream Masters weren't expecting a battle. They didn't expect to be stood up to, so they were a bit arrogant, and they just didn't expect someone to come up and just try to take over. So that's why they were easily defeated, because they'd never been stood up to before, which makes sense, but yeah. Still.
Well, one of them ran away.
Right. That's right. And then finally, a couple people were saying, you know, this episode was just a little too supernatural. You know, there wasn't enough sci-fi stuff into it, not enough scientific reasoning. It was just a little too, you know, ghost supernatural-ish for them. Let's see. We go to Messages in Time for the Guardian. And this goes along with what you were saying earlier, how Remy is used to explain scientific things, you know, in a way that the audience could just sort of understand it easier. So he gets confused a lot. And people were saying, you know, it'd be nice if they would use Wade that way, too, because she's just as dim as Remy is. I'm like, that's not a good compliment. but I get what they're saying, because, yeah, Wade's good at hacking in computers, apparently. But still, she's not a scientist like, you know, Arturo and Quinn. So they could use Wade a little bit more, not just lay everything on Remy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Wade's also like a go-with-the-flow kind of chick. Like, she doesn't need explanation a lot of the time. She's just happy to go with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Makes sense. People were getting tired of Quinn getting with every woman in every episode, because that does happen. As I said, time dilation is hard stuff to understand, and someone went on for a whole thread trying to explain it and people trying to understand it, and it was a long thread. I'm like, yeah, just let it go. Just let it go. Move on. It's complicated stuff, and just understand time moves slower. Good. Move on. Someone said they would have rather had the deleted scene ending that I had talked about instead of the one that actually happened in The Guardian. So where he actually tells Miss Hanley that he was Quinn. Someone had actually wanted that. They predicted it back when the episode aired. I was like, oh, that's a pretty good prediction, but definitely not as good an ending as the one we actually had. And then they also mentioned this episode is very, very Quantum Leap, you know, because you're getting a chance to change something that went maybe not quite the way you would have wanted. So, you know, they could definitely see the Quantum Leap influences here on this episode. And then finally, someone said they were glad that Quinn got into messing around with the past instead of the usual thing where people say, don't change the past because you're going to mess up the future. They were glad to see someone actually affecting the past for a good reason.
We don't have any messages from Earth Prime.
No messages from Earth Prime.
We're lonely.
The mailbox is empty. Cobwebs dusting it.
Yeah. We know you're out there, people. I'm still waiting on that Punk Wade fanfic.
That's right. Let's get Punk Wade together with Crime Quinn. Let's see what happens.
That would be an interesting matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, we are discussing the episodes Desert Storm and Dragon Slide.
I'm trying to remember. I don't really remember Desert Storm. I think I remember Dragon Slide.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I remember Dragon Slide. I know what happens there.
I'm not sure what the episode is.
Yeah.
I'm a little scared now, actually. Oh. Well, that's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, EarthPrime.com, and the forum over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Always very helpful. And hopefully gets us more listener interaction and feedback.
Yep.
Please.
He's on his knees, folks. All right. Yeah. He's on his knees. Yeah, at the Opera House here in Sydney. Come on. We don't need to see this. Come on.
I want that fanfic. Okay, so it's time to get out of here. So I'll just say until next time, it's rather like being inside a Cuisinart, isn't it?
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code, Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.